Hare Krishna. So we were discussing yesterday the second part of the 18th chapter, the Jnana of the Karma Yogi, in which the Jnani understands, or the Karma Yogi with Jnana understands, that I am one of the factors of action, and that understanding keeps free from bondage. Now Krishna will take this discussion to a higher level, another level, where he will discuss action in terms of its components. How do we perform actions? What are the factors involved? Now, action generally has two parts. There is knowledge acquisition, and then there is action execution. So we have, in every activity that we do, there are Jnanendriya and there is Karmendriya that is involved. So for example, the door opened just now. So from the Jnanendriya, sudden stimuli came in. So we looked around and then we saw somebody new coming. Okay, somebody familiar is coming. That is not very interesting. Now let's look. Is the class interesting? We think like that. So our Jnana and Karma, basically, they are there in every action. We look in a particular direction. We look to get some Jnana, and depending on what we see, we do certain action. We may move away from that person, talk with that person, neglect that person, whatever. So there is Jnana and Karma that is involved in both. So Krishna will talk about these two components of action in terms of the three modes. Jnanam jnayam parijnata, jnanam jnayam parijnata, trividha karma chodana, trividha karma chodana, karanam karma karteti, tam karma karteti, trividha karma sangraha. So Jnanam jnayam parijnata. So here the words have specific meanings. Karma chodana. Chodana means the motivation for action. So like I give the example. Jnanam. What is the knowledge? Okay, somebody has come in. Jnayam and parijnata. What is the object of that knowledge? I should know how to respond to it. Somebody is coming into the room. I should know how to respond. And then parijnata is I am the knower. So therefore there is knowledge, there is the object of knowledge, the purpose of knowledge, and then there is the knower. In the process of knowledge acquisition, there are these three factors. Generally speaking, if any of these three factors are not present, then the knowledge acquisition doesn't take place. If I am asleep, then I, the conscious person, karta, parijnata, I am not there. So therefore, the knowledge acquisition cannot take place. If somebody comes in also, nothing will happen. On the other hand, similarly, if many times when we study, if we don't have any objective for the study, then not much knowledge acquisition takes place. I just say we do random reading. Kuch milta hai ke dekhte. But what am I looking for? I don't know. Then it doesn't lead to much solid acquisition of knowledge. So knowledge involves these three things. Okay, I'm reading a particular book. What is the purpose for which I'm reading that book? Okay, I want to prepare for an exam. I want to give a class. I want to answer some questions. These purposes make our knowledge acquisition more focused and more productive. So, in any knowledge acquisition, there are these three factors. Jnanam, jnayam, parijnata. There is the actual knowledge that we acquire. Okay, somebody has come into the room. Then parijnata, I am the knower. And what is the purpose? Okay, if somebody is coming into the room that I am in, I should know why is that person coming. Is the person going to attack me? Or is this a friend who is coming in? Or is he coming by mistake? What is it all? So now, these are the three components of the knowledge acquisition process. Now, along with the knowledge acquisition, there is action execution. In response to the knowledge that we acquire, we execute some action. So, that is, this is a little technical part, and this is fundamental to understanding the remaining sections. That's why all the remaining almost 22 verses are actually focused on a classification that derives from this 18th and 19th verse. So first there is knowledge acquisition, and in that there is knowledge, what is the second one, remember? Purpose of knowledge or objective of knowledge. And third is knower. So what are the Sanskrit words? Jnanam, jnayam, yeah, good. So where is the word jnaya come earlier? Gyan, okay. But that is just a word in a verse. Yeah. Gyan is a concept which is analyzed is in the 13th chapter. 13.13 to 18 is actually Krishna says, Gyanam yattat pravakshami is gyatva mokshase amritam. He says, I'll speak about the Gyanam to you now. So there actually the Gyanam, the object of knowledge in the 13th chapter is to know the soul and the super soul, Supreme Lord. Now, when I come to action execution, what is it? Karanam karma karteti. So, in this, what is required? There is karanam. Karanam karma karteti. So, there are the senses for execution. So, if somebody is coming in the room and there is a wire coming from here, and that person is about to slip on that wire, trip on the wire and fall. Watch out, there is a wire over there. So for me to speak that, I have to have the senses of action. The specific senses that are involved. I may raise my hand to support the person if the person is falling. I may speak if the person has not yet fallen to warn the person. Senses for execution. That is karanam. Then karma. That is the action specific. And karteti. Karta is the doer, the soul. Oh, sorry, this has become opposite over here. So, in each of these, in any action that we do, these are the components. So, Trividha Karma Sangraha. Sangraha means the action that we perform is comprised of these three things. So actually knowledge acquisition creates the motive for action. Isn't it? When I acquire the knowledge, that becomes the motive. Why I am doing a particular action? And after that, I act. So that's why Chodana and Sangraha. So, here the motive for action is Chodana. And then Sangraha means now, here when we talk about action composition, it is components of action. Sangraha. Sangraha means what? Accumulation. Grantho ka sangraha mat karo, adhik, like that. Sangraha. So now, let us move forward and look at what the next verses will say. Is this point clear about the two parts of action and their subcomponents? I don't know, I'll use the word components there below, so I'll use here. You could just call this an analysis of action. So, analysis of action in this is there. So, I once gave a class on number magic in the Bhagavad Gita. So, I talked about how it's so significant that 1.1, 2.2, 3.3, 4.4, like that, 5.5, 17.7, 18.8, each of these verses are so significant. And if you look at all these 18 verses, the essential themes of the Bhagavad Gita get covered. And every one of these verses is very meaningful. Some of them we already know. 7.7 is Mattaha Parataram Na Anyat. 1.1 is Dharma Kshetre Kuru Kshetre. 15.15 is Mattaha Smitir Gyanam Apohanam Cha. So many of these are, as it is, we know them to be very important. 10.10 is Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tamiyena Mamupayantite. So 9.9 is Udasina Vadasinam. I am neutral. So they are all very significant verses. So 18.18 is also, the last part is Krishna is giving a very conceptual analysis of action. Concept-packed analysis rather. Now let's look at the next part. Jnanam karma cha karta cha.
Jnanam karma cha karta cha.
Tridhaiva guna bhedataha. Guna bhedataha. Prochyate guna sankhyane.
Prochyate
guna sankhyane. Yathava shrunuta anyapi. Yathava shrunuta anyapi. So, last part is clear. Shrunuta anyapi. Oh, here. So Krishna is giving a preface to what he's going to speak later. So what is he going to speak now? Guna sankhyane, analysis based on the gunas of what? Three things: jnanam, karma cha karta cha, tridhaiva guna bhedataha. So he will classify according to the mode three things: jnana, karma and karta. So now from the next verse this will start. Now let's look at this back and look at what are the among these six components which are critical. If you see here, parijnata and karta are the same, isn't it? Parijnata and karta are the same. The knower and the doer are ultimately the same person. So that six becomes reduced to five. I'll do this separately. So, now out of the six components, first the two have become is one is parijnata and karta have become one. So, we have got five now. Now, after this, what is the next one? Karanam, jnanam, karma, cha karta, cha. So, now, jnan itself is an independent component. For example, when a person sees a fire in a, say, person, people are watching a movie and people see a fire over there. So now, what that fire will remind a person, it will vary about depending on person to person. Normally, it should alarm a person, oh, there's a fire in this over here. But actually, different people may perceive it differently. Take another example. If somebody sees a liquor bottle, person is in ignorance, the person, oh, so much enjoyment. And a person in passion, he may get some sort of temptation. Should I or should I not? A person in the goodness may say, hey, this is useless. This is illusion. This is entanglement. This is self-destruction. So, the same object is seen, but the jnana that is acquired is different. So, jnana itself is a different component. Now, if you see, jnanam jnaya. So, after that, so Krishna, what he does is, Krishna combines jnanam and jnaya into one, we will see. They are not equal, but jnana and jnaya are combined into one. We will see that, actually speaking, the jnana that we acquire will depend on our objective. What do I want to do? And my objective is determined by the modes. So, in that sense, my knowledge acquisition is very much related to my background vision, my background notion of what life is all about. So, if three boys come to a library, and the three, one is in goodness, one is in passion, one is in ignorance. They have come to a library, the boy in goodness, boy in ignorance thinks, where is a peaceful corner I can go to sleep? You know, the boy in passion thinks, oh, who all girls are there over here? Isn't it? And the boy in goodness says, okay, which book do I want to read? Is that book available or has somebody taken that book? So that they all three come to the same place only. But the response is different. So why? So because their objective is different. So the knowledge that they come to the same library, but the knowledge they acquire also is different. So jnana and jnaya are interconnected. Depending on what is my objective, accordingly I will acquire knowledge. So in this way, the list of six becomes reduced to four. Now, karana is what? Senses. Now, senses are not in particular mode. Senses are used by us. That's why Krishna leaves out the senses. And then, what he does is, the last part is, in karma, there's karanam, karma and karta. So karanam is basically sort of what shall we say, it's insentient. The senses are insentient. So the last component that remains is karma. So how do I respond to it? So these three Krishna will now analyze in the remaining verses. So first you will talk about jnana, then you talk about karma, jnanam, karma cha karta cha, then you will talk about karma and then you will talk about karta. So is this clear? So Krishna has basically analyzed action into six components, and then he has conflated means combined and reduced six into three, and those three he will analyze in three modes now. Okay, fine, let's move forward. Sarvabhuteshu yenaikam bhavamavyayamikshate avibhaktam vibhakteshu tadgyanam viddhi satvikam. So Krishna starts with jnana, and first he describes knowledge and goodness. So he starts with sarvabhuteshu yenaikam. Sarvabhuta means all living beings, all of existence. Ekam, What is that oneness? He says bhava. Bhava is spirit or nature or mode of existence. Bhavam avyayam, that is imperishable. Ikshate, and by that, if that one is not still clear, one understands there is that one, and from that one there is diversity. Avibhaktam vibhakteshu. So actually the same phrase, avibhaktam cha bhuteshu vibhaktam eva cha sthitam, this was talked about in the 13th chapter, I think 16th or 17th verses, one of the verses. There it is talking about a super soul. Or the super soul is in, one super soul is present in different bodies. So here the vision is not of the super soul, it is about a bhava, it is about a nature. So in goodness, a person perceives there is some homogeneity, some unity underlying all the diversity of this world. So the prithak bhava is the characteristic of passion. In passion, the vision of passion is basically fragmented. You know, I am Indian, you are American. I am male, you are female. I am dark, you are fair, whatever. So we keep seeing differences, and passion leads to conflict eventually. So when one goes beyond these external bodily differences and one sees the underlying unity, that is a sign of goodness. So generally speaking, goodness in and of itself cannot give perception of the personal aspect of the spiritual reality. It gives us just the generic perception of spiritual reality. Generic perception of spirituality means Brahman. The Brahman platform one can start perceiving if one is properly situated in goodness. And even we will see that people who are in somewhat in goodness, even if they are not spiritually minded, they will try to see some kind of oneness. They will say, you know, actually we are all human beings and we are a part of one human family. Let us look beyond. So sometimes in movies when there are Hindu-Muslim riots, then the hero may come along and show two people, you know, ye Hindu ki lash hai, ye Muslim ki lash hai. Dekho, dono ka khun beh raha hai. Khun mein kuch farak dikhta hai tumko? So the idea is that person may not be able to see at the spiritual level, but there also the person says, why are you seeing all these differences? See something similar. So that good, that is some inclination towards goodness, that is not properly situated in goodness. So the idea is that in goodness one tries to see commonalities, similarity. In passion one sees differences. Sarvabhuteshu yenaikam bhavam avyayamikshate. So Prabhupada would say that Socrates was to a large extent self-realized. He was quite fearless even at the face of death, because he knew that I am the soul. And he said that when his prosecutors threatened to kill him, to poison him, he said, you can't even catch me, how can you kill me? So then eventually he accepted the hemlock. Hemlock was the poison that was meant to kill. He voluntarily accepted it. Nobody had to force it down his throat. So the idea is that even people who are not connected with a spiritual tradition and who are not necessarily having a serious sadhana, just by intellectual analysis also one can perceive this unifying reality that underlies the diversity. One may not clearly understand what is that reality, but one understands that there is some kind of reality below. So this is sattva-guna. And this jnana itself can solve a lot of problems. You know, in ISKCON, we talk about transcendence, but most of the time there is so much differentiation between my guru and your guru, my temple and your temple, my department and your department. So this is quite unfortunate. This sort of differentiation is based, you know, if we are differentiating my guru is greater than your guru, then we are not even in goodness. We are simply, the greatness of my guru is just an instrument to prove my own greatness. My guru is great, therefore I am great. And therefore I am greater than you are greater, because my guru is greater than your guru. So which is quite unfortunate. This is a mentality in the mode of passion. So at the very level, at the very basic level, if we are in goodness, we will see that actually we are one family. We are one family of Krishna devotees, one family of Prabhupada followers. We are one whole unit. So the whole, if you know, the Kapiladev talks about bhakti in the three modes. Although bhakti in principle is transcendental, but in practice, depending on the consciousness of the person may practice bhakti in goodness, passion or ignorance. So we may not be able to see everybody as a transcendentalist. We may not see everybody as a devotee. Remember, we discussed earlier that how a person can see the world differently depending on perception. So for example, when a man sees a woman, the man can see a woman in different ways. When a man sees a woman, the primary vision may be that as a sex, as a sense object, as an object for sexual gratification. But that is largely a vision in the mode of passion. As per modes or level of consciousness, we could say it like this. So now, when one is in the mode of passion, one will see as a, let's put it here like this. So actually, when there is mode of ignorance, actually at the very level, in the mode of, at the very basis, in the mode of passion, there is some perception of the factor of enjoyment. So at that level, one at least, you know, whenever there is some, whenever the sex between people, when there is consensual, that is in the mode of passion. But when there is violence and brutality and there is rape, that is kama, which is filled with krodha. So that is actually in the mode of ignorance. So when there is violence with the sex, that is in the mode of ignorance. And beyond that, there is mode of goodness. So in a cultured society, women are seen as mothers. And as devotees, we also try to have this cultured vision, where we try to see women as mothers. Now, actually, in a sense, these three are all material visions only. But at a material level, we see them differently. And then beyond that, at transcendental level, we see them as devotees. You know, we say Vaishnavis. And at a highest level, actually, we see them as gopis, as meant for the enjoyment of Krishna. So actually, this is a complete radical shift. Or maybe devotees or potential devotees, we can say, whatever it may be. Then, okay, this is like this actually. So the highest vision will be so of course, all this doesn't mean that we look at women and try to think of all these things. We avoid looking at women, but the idea over here is that whatever we see, how do we interpret, how do we perceive that? So at a transcendental level, Eventually, when we become preachers, then we find that women will come for our program, they will attend classes also. Then we have to see them not as women meant for our enjoyment. We have to see them as their souls who are actually seeking Krishna, their potential devotees. When they become devotees, then we see them as devotees, Vaishnavis. They are meant for Krishna's service. And then at a highest level, we see them as transcendental, meant for Krishna's enjoyment. So, Ramananda Rai, when he was decorating and massaging and preparing the women, the Devidasis, for the service of Jagannath, he was seeing them at what level? He was seeing them at the highest level, transcendental level of the gopis. They are meant for Krishna's enjoyment. And not only was he seeing them like that, he was seeing himself also as Vishakha. You know, he was not seeing himself as Ramananda Rai. Vishakha's service is to decorate Radharani and prepare her for her pastimes with Krishna. So, in that sense, that vision is demonstrated to some extent in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did that, let Ramananda Rai do that. And there was misunderstanding, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu clarified that. When Pradyumna Mishra came and he sort of was bewildered. He was a Brahmana. What is this Ramananda Rai doing? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu talked about him. How glorious he is. But on the other hand, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is sannyasi. So he never did anything like this. And one time he heard the Gopi Gita being sung. Not the Gopi Gita. The Jayadeva Goswami's Gita Govinda being sung. And then he was so attracted by that song that he ran towards it. And as he was running, and then who was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's servant? Govinda. So Govinda ran with him, and Govinda was trying to stop, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is completely transcendental. And then suddenly Govinda went right in front of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and screamed. He said, "It is a woman." And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stopped just by hearing, as if he had turned to stone. And he said, "Govinda, you saved my life today." He says, "Today, if I had touched this woman, I would have committed suicide. I would not have been able to live." So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appreciated transcendental vision of Ramananda Rai, but he treated women very respectfully as mothers. And he did not act transcendentally, especially with respect to the opposite sex. Even when he was in his mystical trances, when he would be at a very elevated level of consciousness, still he would show that among his male associates. As a sannyasi, he set a very strict example of how a sannyasi should deal with women. So these are elevated levels of perception. And when Srila Prabhupada went to America, he saw those boys and girls as potential devotees, and he encouraged them and he helped them to become devotees. So in general, the culture, there is the Vaishnava, in one sense the upper part is the Vaishnava part, devotional part, and this is the Varnashram part. So as a steady situation, the Varnashram is the steady platform. And that's why we have this whole culture of calling women as mothers. Now, there are some Mataji in ISKCON who object to the reference of Mataji. And their idea is, they said that actually we should not see each other as men and women. And they say that women and men should all be called as Prabhus. So, now that is not generally what the Vedic standard is. So their reasoning is that, you know, women calling other women as Matajis is a little odd. So that may be true, but men calling women as Prabhus, that is also not really Vedic culture. So in deference to some Vaishnavis' wishes, sometimes we may do that. Sometimes Radhanath Maharaj, when he is referring to some of his god sisters, he may refer to them as Prabhu. And sometimes, I earlier used to refer to Mataji, then he is Prabhu. Now I have seen he generally refers to Devi. You know, so-and-so Devi, and so-and-so. That's how. So that's a non-controversial reference, where you don't endorse either side. So the point is that there is ongoing conflict which will always be there within a transcendental society that is also within the material world. The transcendental vision and the material vision will be slightly different. So, in the material point of view, if you see in the third canto, when Swayambhu Manu is referring to Devahuti, you know, he refers to her as Amba. Amba is mother. You know, his own daughter, but he's referring to her as mother. So actually, it is just in Vedic culture, a woman is referred to as a mother in many times. And that doesn't mean that there is any disrespect involved in that. Today, if a woman is referred to as a mother, she thinks, am I old enough to be a mother? They don't want to be referred to as a mother. So one devotee was telling, he was going, he was at the petrol pump and he was just filling the petrol in the vehicle, and there was some Mataji behind. And said, she was again in a hurry. He says, move ahead quickly. He says, thoda rukhiye Mataji. So she got angry. Main kya Mataji dikhti ho kya tumko? He says, Pitaji to nahi dikhte aap. So actually it is very unfortunate that that which is a object, that which is a, actually a term of respect, you know, it is seen as an insult, because the idea is that if you're, somebody starts calling you as a mother, that means you have become old and now you are no longer a sexually attractive person. But the idea that one should always be considered to be sexually attractive, that is an ideal which can never be sustained. You know, how long can a person stay sexually attractive? You know, even if a person wants to, a person cannot be very sexually attractive for many years. So it's the forcible, if one tries to develop something to become attractive in the eyes of the world, nature forcibly takes it away. And to add sort of insult to injury, not only does one lose that, but every year a new batch of people comes who replaces you. So what happens is that I may be attractive 1 year, but the next year there's another batch, a younger batch who comes who becomes attractive. So this is not just females, even males, if their sense of identity comes just from their sexual attractiveness, then that is going to be always a very unstable and destabilizing basis for our identity. It is, as it is unstable and then lose, it becomes completely destabilizing. So in the mode of goodness, we perceive women as mothers. And the idea is, we may not be seeing women as mothers may not necessarily be a transcendental vision, but there is some kind of ekatva, that all women should be treated as mothers. There is that oneness over there. So the idea of treating women as mothers doesn't have the difference, you know, this woman is more beautiful, this woman is less beautiful. So it's not. All women in a culture society should be seen as women. Matravat paradareshu. So all women who are the spouses of somebody else, wives of somebody else, they are seen as mothers. So this is not necessarily a transcendental vision, but the idea of oneness is can be seen only in goodness. Okay. So any questions about this? Yeah.
Even like people not all favorable to our practice of like Krishna consciousness. Like, I was saying that our friends who are pious religious, they are also somehow, you know, sometimes saying, why is it, if they are in mode of goodness, they find it difficult to accept, they feel it's too much.
Yeah. Why is it that some people in the mode of goodness are not receptive to Krishna consciousness? Krishna talks about it in the 14th chapter of Nyanalal's 3 mode, that goodness also brings 2 attachments. That is, sukha sangena badnati, jnana sangena chanaga. So sukha and jnana. So sukha means one feels comfortable. I'm happy here. I have my knowledge, I have my ideas. And jnana means one thing, I know better. So I know better. So there's these two notions. Generally speaking, you know, each mode brings its own attachments. So generally, the mode of passion, the attachment is sense enjoyment. The mode of goodness, what is the attachment to? Knowledge means exactly what? Yes, okay, then. One is in goodness, one becomes attached to one's opinions. One becomes good. The characteristic of goodness is, you know, I have my intelligence, I have my knowledge, and I gain this understanding, and I prove that I am right. So in general, there is a very strong attachment and goodness, the attachment to one's own opinions. Ultimately, our knowledge is expressed through our opinions. So attachment to knowledge is expressed through our attachment to opinions. So then that's we see this transcendence of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada, the attachment to nationalism is not undesirable. It is at least higher than just sensual attachment or family attachment. But when he met Bhaktisiddhanta Sri Thakur, and Bhaktisiddhanta Sri Thakur defeated him, he was happy. And he told it, my spiritual master defeated me. He would tell it very happily. So in general, in goodness we acquire certain conceptions, and those conceptions may also be, from the material perspective, noble, laudable at their level. But if one becomes too attached to them, then that leads to problems. So humanism is very popular nowadays. Humanism means, you know, we are all human beings together and we should have a human spirit. We should have a commonality of the human race. But often this humanism is militantly secular. Secular humanism. You know, religion is also one thing that fragments humanity into various groups. And therefore we should avoid religion. Then we can be united as a human platform. But the problem with the secular humanism is there is no ultimate meaning to life. Okay, we are all human beings, but then all human beings have to die. All human beings have to suffer old age, disease. So sometimes it may also be that our spirituality may diminish our humanity. That will be unfortunate when it happens. If our spirituality diminishes our humanity, that our spirituality should enhance our humanity. Enhance our humanity means, see, if a person is a beggar, and when the beggar comes to us, and suppose, you know, sometimes the beggars are in a really bad condition, their hands and legs may be broken, and they may be starving, and then at that time, if some upcoming devotee is there, and that devotee says, noble said everybody wants to give some money at that time to that beggar, and he says, you will get bound by karma if you give money to him. You know, such a statement, even if it is philosophically correct, it appears very insensitive at that particular time. Our spirituality should enhance our humanity. We want to help, and also because we have philosophical understanding, so we will not give money, but we may give prasad. And we should arrange to give prasad. So if our spirituality diminishes our humanity, that can become very alienating for many people. And they feel that what is the use of all your ideology if you don't even exhibit basic human sensitivity, basic human compassion? So sometimes we may be at fault and sometimes they may be at fault. So in general, spirituality has to be also presented in a way that enhances, not diminishes our humanity. Not just presented, but it also has to be implemented in that way. And that is sometimes a problem, because if we become a little too fanatical, then that can, in the practice of spirituality, in the jnana level, we may lose our humanity. So, how we may lose our humanity in the jnana level? For example, somebody in some family, some loved one has passed away. And then they are lamenting at that time. And then we say, hey, you're not the body, you're the soul. Don't be illusion. Don't lament like this. Now, there may be a forum for telling that. But first, we have to express sympathy. You know, to express condolences. Show that we share in their grief. And then we can talk about further things. For example, when these seven devotees had passed away, and there was this memorial which was held, the whole emphasis was on how wonderful they were and how we are suffering from their loss. You know, and all the relatives who came over there, you know, many of them became very immensely inspired by that. So, you know, at that point they did not need the knowledge that you are not the body or the soul. That's not the forum for telling that. So it's important for us to present philosophy in a way that brings people closer to Krishna, not take them away from Krishna. So when the people are themselves attached to their opinions and they are not receptive to Krishna, then the fault is there if they are unreceptive. On the other hand, if our practice or presentation of spirituality is diminishing our humanity instead of enhancing our humanity, then the fault is ours. Okay? Yes? So if somebody has been passed in the mode of goodness in the past and then comes to Krishna consciousness, then that person has a particular vision of how things should be done. Yes. In general, ISKCON is always going to have a certain level of irreducible individuality. All of us are individuals, and everybody is going to, that's irreducible. So if somebody is there, basically, you know, if you are in an institution, you have to follow one of the three things: lead or follow or get out of the way. Now lead or follow or get out of the way. So if a particular person has a vision that this is how we should do things, then fine, go ahead and do that. You can, a person can start his own center. It can be start in a small way. So if you will see, if you go to every temple, a temple has its particular mood. Say Pune is stricter than Mumbai. So, and one reason is that primarily, you know, Radhishyampu comes from a very cultured family and he wanted to have particular standards over there. Now that is all within the ambit of what Srila Prabhupada wanted, but within what Srila Prabhupada wanted also, there can be things, which, places which are stricter, there are things which are a little more lenient. It's not that one is right and another is wrong. It's that there are different levels of devotees who have to be accommodated in different places. So every leader will have that freedom. So in general, if we are in a project where we are followers, then we should cooperate with the vision of the leader as much as possible. And then we can have some constructive discussion and clarification of why, if certain things really militate against our sensibilities, then we can avoid them. You know, it's not that we have to do them ourselves. So for example, you know, many people get the whole idea of pizza prasad gives people a culture shock. How can pizza be prasad? So if we can't digest it, it's not that we have to go and find fault with everyone else. You know, we can avoid pizza prasad, and later on when, you know, if we become a temple president, we can avoid pizza prasad in that temple. So the point here is that we will always have this diversity, and if it is within the ambit of Vedic culture, there's nothing wrong in it. So during Srila Prabhupada's time also, you know, there were two distant temples, San Francisco and New York. So the whole mood in New York was stricter, and San Francisco was sort of more lenient. And the devotees in San Francisco, they were doing more big things. They arranged the mantra rock band and they were meeting big people and they were doing big things that way. But then the sort of the strictness of the standards, the attendance of the morning program, the following of the, say, avoiding of food outside, all that was not so strict over there. And eventually later on, you know, the temple that became the leader in America was neither San Francisco nor New York, it was LA. Los Angeles became like the Western headquarters. And that was because the devotees there were visionary over there. So they did a lot of innovative things. Tamal Krishna Maharaj was one of the leaders over there. Prabhupada called LA as the Western headquarters. So ultimately, if one has a particular conceptions, they're not wrong. What is wrong there is that we should not impose them on others. But if we are given scope to do a particular project in particular, we can do that in cooperation under the guidance of our authorities. And then the people who like that kind of standards will come to us. And those who find the standards a little more strict, they will go elsewhere. Now some people, I know devotees in Pune who find Mumbai standards more comfortable. I find some devotees in Mumbai who feel that they would be happier in Pune. So this could be because of nature, or this could just be the grass is greener on the other side. It is also always possible that way, whatever it is. The point is that this is perfectly understandable and it's compatible with Krishna consciousness. The only thing that is not compatible is imposing it on others who don't want it. Is that clear?
Yeah.
Any further questions? Yeah, so let's move forward. We'll try to complete these three categories of the jnana.
पृथक्त्वेनतु यज्ञानं तत्त्वेनतु यज्ञानं नानाभावान् पृथग्विधान् नाभावान् पृथग्विधान् वेत्ति सर्वेषु भूतेषु तज्ज्ञानं विद्धि राजसं तज्ज्ञानं विद्धि राजसं.
सो पृथक्त्वेना, सो अर्लियर इट वाज एकत्वेना, नाउ इट इज पृथक्त्वेना, डिफरेंशिएशन. वन सीज एवरीथिंग इज डिफरेंट. नानाभावान् पृथग्विधान्. So, actually what one sees is that different living beings have different natures. So, bhuteshu is living beings. So, there's bhuta is beings, bhava is nature. So, different living beings have different natures. So, for example, now this could be just at a sheer bodily level. As I said earlier, man, woman, male, female. But this could also be at a more intellectual level. That means now, in Christian, in the Bible, there is a reference to the soul. But this concept of soul is not very systematically analyzed. No, in the Bible, in the Bible and the Quran, the soul, the word soul is often used not to refer to a higher dimensional entity. That means there's a higher dimensional being. No, I don't want to make this more complicated, but you must have become familiar with my language now. So, ontological means that which exists. Ontological. But in Christianity, often it is used to as the word soul. Love God with all thy heart and all thy soul. So, it's often used as a reference to a, is a metaphorical reference to our non-material essence. So the soul is not treated as a separate entity. And one of the prominent theologians in the Christian tradition, Thomas Aquinas, he came up with the idea that there are three different kinds of souls. So his idea was that in humans have, it's called as rational souls. Animals have sentient souls. And plants have what he called as vegetative souls. So what was the idea? So he felt that there is a huge amount of difference between humans, plants and animals. So to our normal vision, we cannot see emotions in plants. We can see emotions in animals. So, but still, you can't deny that plants have life. Plants grow, plants reproduce, plants give fruits and flowers. So he said that there has to be a soul where there is life. But that soul is of such a diminished level of consciousness that is categorized as a vegetative soul. And then animals, they have emotions. So because of these emotions, he categorized that they must be having a higher soul, which is called a sentient soul. And beyond that, his idea was that humans alone, he used the word rationality in terms of metaphysical thinking. Humans alone can do Brahma Jigyasa. So he says humans must be having a higher category of soul, a higher kind of soul, which enables them to do this kind of thinking. So Prithak Bhavan. So this was the vision. And by this logic, they infer that therefore animals can also be killed for eating. Because animals don't have a soul like human beings. So that's why Srila Prabhupada would not use the argument that animals have souls like us. Srila Prabhupada talked about the ekatva at a level at which they can pursue. He said the animals cry, animals scream. When they are killed, animals cry, animals scream. And one Christian priest argued Prabhupada that actually, you know, but they're animals, they're different from human beings. So Prabhupada said that, okay, would you, if a human baby was brought in front of you, would you eat that? He said, shocked. He said, how can you do that? That would be cannibalism. He said, no, but you look at a calf when it is going to be slaughtered and look at a human being when they're going to be slaughtered. Human baby, actually, both the reactions would be exactly similar. So here, because philosophically they do not accept the idea of one common soul, Prabhupada talked about ekatva in a way that they can perceive. So we see these characteristics, presence of emotions and the presence of the frantic struggle for survival based on and feverish disposition of all of one's energies to try to survive. Now the Vedic understanding is that these three differences are there. But the differences are because the degree of covering on the soul is different. So this is referred to in which verse in the Bhagavad Gita? In 3.38. Dhume navriyate vahanir. That verse is there. So, difference among species is not due to different souls, but due to different degrees of covering on similar souls. So this is 3.38. So Prithak Bhav is very common in a passionate world because it's very natural for people to just see in terms of differences. And unfortunately, this happens even in traditional culture also. See, the Varnashram, as I said, you remember we discussed Varnashram was not just for discrimination, but it was also for cooperation. So the idea was create a sense of commonality. Varnashram provides a people with a bigger family. But if the practitioners are in passion, then they will not focus on cooperation, they will focus on discrimination. Rather than saying we are all Brahmana, they say they are all Shudras. And the discrimination will result. So actually Ekatva and Pruthakva, they in a sense go together. In the sense that at a material level we can see Pruthakva. But at a material level also we can see Ekatva. So the purpose of Varnashram is, so if Varnashram are in goodness, it will lead to cooperation because you can see Ekatva. Like this. And if they are in passion, it will lead to discrimination. And that was what has unfortunately happened traditionally in Indian society, that because the people were largely in passion, even the Brahmins were in passion, they were attached to their worldly goods. And they did not see the Shudras as souls who are also potentially spiritual. They saw them as lower caste people. So that's why the whole concept, whole discrimination of Varnashram, of caste system came about from Varnashram. So we'll continue in the evening class talking about the mode of knowledge and the mode of ignorance. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupad ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Tai Gaur Premanande. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Jai.